You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey, queens. Hey. So, as you know, we are on our summer vacation, so we are rerunning some episodes from the Patreon vault. So this episode came at a time right after America's very first female vice president was elected. So we were on a bit of a political kick. I hope y'all enjoy this because she's a fascinating fucking lady. Oh, don't let me fucking forget. If you're new here, we curse a lot. So if that's not your thing, keep it moving. All right, cheers, bitches.
Do 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 do. Investigator Conrad. Do 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 do.
Nathan.
Haiti.
We back.
We back again. All these bitches are bad again.
If you caught our last All Levels Patreon episode, we talked about Ann Richards. We are just, you know, we've had a big election that resulted in the first female vice president. And
as,
so,
as well as the most females voted into Republican Congress ever. So
yes. Yay. So it.
Yes.
So Nathan and I both researched female politicians from history that, you know, were like first. I'm going to talk about Shirley Chisholm, who was the first Black woman elected to Congress and then the first Black woman to seek a major party's nomination for the presidency. So yeah, let's talk about her. Her life motto, like her slogans, anytime she ran for political office, the title of her book is Unbought and Unbossed.
That is so Daenerys Targaryen of her.
It is.
Unbought and unbossed.
Yes. Fire. Yes. Shirley was born November 30th, 1924, making her a Sagittarius. She is incredibly straightforward. She's very determined. So this tracks with that sign. Her name at birth was Shirley Anita St. Hill, and she was born into Brooklyn. She was born in Brooklyn. Both of her parents are immigrants. Her dad is from Guyana, and her mom is from Barbados.
Okay.
While she was coming up, like while she was growing up, both of her parents worked. They had to fucking put food on the table. And Shirley's mom was like, I don't think my kids are getting enough attention from me. They aren't getting the kind of upbringing I want them to have at this point in our lives. So she sent Shirley and Shirley's three younger sisters to Barbados to be raised by their maternal grandmother for a few years. Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
Shirley started attending school in Christchurch, Barbados. From what I can gather, it was like a very rural upbringing. Mm-hmm. It was like farming land, and it was pretty much, you know, like Little House on the Prairie when they're in school, it's just one big room for all
that's
the schooling.
What I was about to say. It probably reminds me of that where it's just one room and it has the bell above it and they ring the bell every morning.
Yes, exactly. You're picturing it exactly correct. Yes. I watched a video of her talking about her education in Barbados, and she's like, I can't say for sure if it's my schooling in Barbados that made this happen, but of the four daughters, three of us got scholarships to college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She thinks very, very highly of the education system in Barbados, or at least the one she got. She credits her grandmother with a lot of that. Her grandmother is really strict, really Christian, and really education-based. But also, her grandmother was like, don't ever let anybody tell you you were lesser than. Your opinion is just as important as anybody else's. It doesn't matter that you're a woman. It doesn't matter that you're a minority. You are somebody, and don't you ever fucking forget it. And she never did.
If Granny had a t-shirt, it would say, don't start no shit. There won't be no shit.
Don't take no shit. She,
Granny.
Yes. So Shirley was in Barbados from ages 3 to 9. So that's like, that's your formative years, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. That's like, you know, before you go to school up until like what, fourth grade? That's a really important time for
you. Yeah, that's a big part in developing your personality. It was just such a good role model for her to have. And that's such an important time to be telling children that you don't have to take shit, you know? And I think this did a huge spoiler alert, you know, she goes on to be a hard-headed bitch and it's a good thing. And she can accredit it to her time in Barbados. She spoke with an accent, like a little bit of an accent for the rest of her life.
That's cool.
Yeah. So they head back to New York in 1934. And for the rest of her life, she considers herself a Barbadian American. I'm not sure. Barbados, Barbadian American?
Barbadian, Barbadian.
She considers herself multicultural. Okay, so she's back in America where she lived for the rest of her life. And she attends this high school called Girls High School, which is very self-explanatory. But it was, so like, it was a public school, but you had to like get accepted into it.
Okay, it's like, so it's like a, like almost like a charter school, but like a gifted and talented school.
Kind of, yeah. It's like a gifted and talented school that was still like funded with public money, but you had to get accepted into it. What's interesting, 1930s, 1940s in America, there was this big deal about segregation in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
This was a desegregated school.
Oh, wow. In the 40s?
In Brooklyn, which was a mainly minority area. But the school was, the majority of the students were white girls.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but usually wealthy families.
Well, but that's the thing. This wasn't, not necessarily a wealthy family school. It wasn't a private school. It was a public school. It was just such a good school. It was in a minority area, but it was such a good school that white people were still sending, hoping to get their kids into it. So many people having such a horrible time with integration and everything. How lucky that she lived in Brooklyn and her parents valued education. And
in the 40s. In the 40s.
Yeah. It's just, that blew my mind. The school is still there. It's now they've built on another part of it. So it's integrated, like boys and girls. And it's still a very famous historical school. One, for being so progressive. And secondly, because something about the architecture is a big deal. I don't fucking know. Anyway, so she graduates in 1942 and is offered a full scholarship to Brooklyn College, which is like a local university. While in school, she helps to found that school's chapter of the Harriet Tubman Society.
What?
Yep. Which it's a student body group that works towards getting more African-American studies into schools and getting more women in the student body.
Work that diversity, bitch.
Right? Both seem like the norm now, but in the 40s, yeah, that was a bit
that's,
of a whoa.
That's crazy back in the 40s.
Exactly. She was on the debate team.
Just like Anne with a plan.
Just like Anne with a plan. She was a mouthy bitch who didn't back down from an argument, which we love here.
Nerd.
Yeah, she was a nerd. She was an epic nerd. She, you know, she just had that ingrained in her like DNA from her Barbados grandma that like, you need to have your voice heard. You need to get an education. You are important. Don't let anybody tell you that your opinion doesn't matter.
Wow. Could you imagine what that would have done for so many women that we've talked about in history that if they had a grandma that said that to them?
Just telling them your voice is important. People need to hear what you have to say. So she graduates with a honors and she gets a BA, just like with Ann Richards. I don't know what she got her bachelor's in.
They're like, hey, you read some books and you're a woman.
Very Yay. Frustrating. But so she got her bachelor's and she had some professors telling her she should consider a political career.
Wow.
And she goes, one, I'm a woman. Two, I'm black. And she literally said, don't you know that's a double handicap? And so she just kind of like threw it out of her mind. She's like, I'm not trying to like fight for a seat at the table my whole life. I'm going to go just make my own life about it. So she decides to start a career in childhood development and education, which for the late 40s, early 50s was one of the only programs that were acceptable for women. There was like that and like maybe being like nursing, stuff like that. That it just wasn't, you know.
You were a teacher or you were a nurse. No, that's very 50s. I mean, Anne did the same thing. She was going to be a teacher.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I really do think that Shirley has a deep, deep passion for education. Sure. Because of how, I mean, it's gotten her so far, you know.
Yeah, it basically, she would not be where she is right now or where she was right then if she did not have that education.
Exactly. There weren't, it's not like she came from a rich family or had connections or anything. Mm-hmm. She had to pull herself up. So I also don't want to dismiss it like she was leaning into a traditional role. Because like I said, it was her passion, I do mm-hmm. believe. So now she's done with school and she's like, I guess I should consider dating. She's like never been on a date. She's oh, like wow. graduated college. It's just never been a focus of her. I guess we should mention she never has kids because it doesn't really come up again. So I guess since she wasn't like hellbent on like being a mother wasn't something that was like a priority to her. Mm-hmm. She just never thought of dating until 1947 or 1948. She meets this guy named Conrad Chisholm, and he is a Jamaican immigrant, and he had just come to America about 1946. And he was a private investigator.
Do 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 do. Investigator Conrad. Do do
yes,
do do do.
Exactly. So she and investigator Conrad get married in 1949. There's not a whole lot to know about Conrad, like, which is almost kind of cool because it's all like when you read a lot of women in history's like Wikipedia page, for example, it like so much of their lives is often tied to that of their husbands and like what their husband did and how it affected their life. So I've kind of loved that her husband like was only mentioned like twice on her Wikipedia
yeah,
page.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was with my research, was it was like there was nothing on her husband. I was like, you know what? She didn't need it.
Yeah, she didn't need it. He seemed to be really, really supportive. And it kind of reminded me, because like right now we're also talking about Victoria Woodhull a lot. It kind of reminded mm-hmm. me of Colonel Blood, how he just sort of sat back and let her do her thing.
It's very refreshing to see a man that supports a woman that has ambition.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to let you shine bright like a diamond. You do you, honey. So yeah, very refreshing. So Shirley is rocking it. She is running two pre-K facilities. It seems that like early childhood development is like her real, real jam. Mm-hmm. And she decides that she wants to go on and get a higher education herself. So she gets accepted into Columbia University. And she gets her master's in education in 1952.
Cool.
So I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole like about this because I was like, I can't believe Columbia was co-ed in the 50s because it wasn't. They they only accepted women into very few schools, and teaching school was one of them. So her master's, while it's from Columbia University, like she's not invited to all the alumni parties. You know what I mean? It's just this one school within Columbia University.
Sometimes education can be a bag of dicks too.
I wanted to know when Columbia went co-ed, and I was like fully co-ed. I was shocked by the answer. 1983.
Holy shit.
1983. We probably have listeners to this show that when they were born.
Yeah.
They still 1983. Wow. That was bananas. Wow. I went down like a little bit of a rabbit hole about this, like I said, and there's like when they like in 1981 is when they like let the student body vote on if the school should become completely co-ed.
Oh my God.
They voted yes. And like one student goes, life is co-ed, so college should be co-ed. And it's like, yeah, no duh. Every like most other Ivy League schools went full co-ed in the 70s. Like,
yeah,
that's Columbia University.
That's shocking to me. I had no idea.
I was shocked too. I was expecting like 71 or something like that. So anyway.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places. Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
But since education is an acceptable career path for women, she was accepted. And after she graduates, you know, graduating from an Ivy League college, yeah, it gave her a big boost in her career. And she becomes a consultant for the City of New York daycare development programs. So, cool. I feel like she's one of those people that just really aren't into downtime because she then joined a number of local political groups.
So I wouldn't say she's restless because that puts a negative connotation to her. But she's very much like, she's like, I'm not doing something. I need to do something now.
I'm kind of like that, which I mean, I work a full-time job and do this podcast and exercise every day. If I have too much downtime, I get depressed. So maybe she was like me and just being like, if I'm not using my brain, I get the sands. So, but we didn't mention it earlier. Her dad was really, she grew up kind of knowing about politics because her dad was in the labor union and he was a big supporter of, like, he would go and like canvas and go to like rallies and stuff like that for people that supported labor unions. So it's not like she just kind of got into politics out of nowhere. Her dad was pretty involved. And so she joins these leagues. The first political league she got involved in was the first to promote the election of the first Black judge in New York. She left this political program because they didn't want her pushing women's issues.
Ooh, and she was like, nah, fuck that.
Yeah, she was like, the fucking double handicap fuck again. Mm-hmm. But we'll see this a lot. We'll see this when we talk about Victoria Woodhull, too. And we'll see this in other times in her life. These minority groups in history just feel like we can only focus on one issue at a time. And right now we're focusing on getting Black people elected. So we can't focus on your women's stuff right now.
I mean, it's so true. I mean, it's still like just until now we focused on Black women.
I mean, you see this so much in the women's suffragette movement that we're going to talk about in the next Victoria Woodhull episode. So anyway, it's problematic with that progressives feel like we can only progress one thing at a time, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she leaves that group. She does join local chapters of NAACP, League of Women Voters. She joins her local chapter of the Democratic Club. The NAACP was the only group that she was in that wasn't almost completely white people.
Well, it shouldn't be because
I mean, yeah, but it's just sort of like kind of like whenever we talked about Victoria Woodhull, how like she didn't want to be seen as just a progressive for women's issues. She wanted to like get integrated with, you know, you got to make allies or whatever. And so that's kind of what Shirley was doing.
It makes me kind of wonder, like, did she, because I remember whenever we covered Daisy Bates was in the NAACP around this same time. So I wonder if she maybe have heard of her.
Maybe. Know? Was Daisy Bates in New York, though?
No, but she was like the head of one of the chapters of the NAACP. Yeah. So she would have been a big person.
Yeah, they probably may have crossed paths. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward a little bit to 1964. New York was redistricted and Shirley's living in Brooklyn in this like highly Democratic area and it's redistricted. And now they don't really have anybody representing them. And now it's like almost a completely Black district. And as we've mentioned, she's involved in so many of these organizations locally and she's running the daycares. Like everybody knows her in her district now. And she decides, you know what? Maybe I do need to get into politics. Maybe it's now that people know me here that me being a Black woman isn't going to be a handicap because they already know what I can do and they see how passionate I am. Mm-hmm. So, she runs for her district's New York State Assembly because the redistricting now it's just wide. Her position is wide open. So she's like, let's do this. Side note, because I wasn't sure what state assembly meant. New York state legislature has two houses. The higher house is like the state Senate and the lower house is the assembly.
So okay. Makes sense.
Lower state senator.
So she wasn't like a high power, person at that point, but
no, but you know, the people working at the lower level are the people that get shit done that are like out there talking to the people. So
yep. And you got to start somewhere.
Local government matters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She got pushback from the Democratic Party because vagina.
Oh, got it. Boobs, vagina.
Boobs. Ah. Yes. Chromosomes. Not good. And they didn't respect her. And they said that she wasn't electable, which is something we're going to hear, which we still hear about women.
Oh, yeah.
Not electable. So Shirley was like, okay, whatever. I am running with or without the party support. Fuck you guys. And so she appealed to the women of her district hard. And she won so much. Like, she won, like, there was three people running all together. And she... like tripled the other people's votes combined.
Yes, bitch.
One.
Love it.
Yes. So she served on the New York General Assembly from 64 to 68. And during that tenure, she proposed a bill to provide state aid to daycare centers and voted to increase funding for schools on like a per pupil basis, which was like, no, if this school has more students, more money. And everyone was like, who would have thought
that it costs more money for more kids.
And she also like went into the schools and the local businesses and talked to like Black people being like, you can get involved. Anybody can run. Look, I did it. I'm a poor girl from Brooklyn. You can do it. Like, and she really
a woman of immigrants too. Right.
She's like, you can do it. And this is another reason that she just gives me so many Kamala vibes, you know? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. She was really popular in her district, as you can probably imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1968, there was an election and she ran for House of Representatives for the New York's 12th Congressional District. And this is the first time she used the slogan, unbought and unbossed.
Like, boss-ass bitch.
Unbought because she was just some chick from Brooklyn. Like, she didn't have a big political backing. She didn't have like a whole lot of political sponsors. She was a grassroots movement. Like, mm-hmm. she didn't have big oil money or anything like that.
So amazing. Back in the 60s too. Yeah. Holy
and
shit.
Unbossed because no one was going to tell her what to fucking do.
Gotta love a woman like that.
Yes. So like I said, this will go on to be her slogan for the rest of her life. And it's a good slogan. Okay. So... Oh. She wasn't uncontested. There were a couple of other men that wanted to run for the Democratic option, but TLDR, she got the nomination. But then her real like opponent there was this guy that was running for the Liberal Party. There it was like a third party. I guess there wasn't really anybody running in the Republican Party. But this guy's name was James Farmer, and it was real competition for her. So let's talk about James Farmer's background. Okay. He's also African-American.
Okay.
He marched with Martin Luther King.
That's cool.
Civil rights protest. He was, you know, when you're running for a Black district and you're like, yeah, MLK, my buddy MLK over here. That
helps out a lot.
Yeah. He was a really cool guy and he did a lot of really great things. But he completely dismissed Shirley.
Like, ooh, don't ever underestimate a strong, powerful woman.
And Shirley took offense because he was just sort of like, are you going to vote for this teacher or are you going to vote for me? I know MLK, you know? And so Shirley was like, he doesn't even go here because he didn't live in Brooklyn.
It reminds me of Mean Girls.
Well, that's exactly what I took it from. Yeah. So it should.
She doesn't even go here.
He does. He lived in Manhattan.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Yeah. Like maybe he had like a P.O. box in Brooklyn or something. But she's like, he doesn't even go here. He doesn't know what you guys need. And so she starts this like hardcore grassroots campaign. She hits the streets. She's talking to the people. We find out from her time in public education, she has learned to be fluent in Spanish.
Yes, bitch.
So she's going into the Spanish schools and the Spanish speaking, the Latino businesses and stuff. And she's speaking to them without a translator. She's, you know,
that means a lot, like, especially to someone that English is not their first language. English is not an easy language to learn. And so for someone to walk in and start talking to you in your native language, that makes you feel like they care about you.
Well, from her time teaching at these schools where there were a lot of people with immigrants bringing their children in, she realized, oh, a lot of my students are English as second language. So she learned Spanish. Yes, learning Spanish, learning any different language as an adult is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant a lot to the people in her district. She won.
Yes.
It was a huge upset that no one, you know, no political, nobody on CNN or Fox News or anything would have been thinking she was going to win. But she
won. she's Black. She's a woman. And like she said earlier, that's a double handicap, especially in the 60s.
But I honestly, when I was reading about her campaign, I was exhausted reading about how active she was, how much she was out there talking to the people, how she busted her ass. She didn't have any fucking money, but she was out there speaking Spanish, kissing babies, being unbought and unbossed, and it paid off. So, however, I didn't get any fucking media coverage, which really bummed her out because she's the first woman being elected to Congress or the first Black woman. I'm sorry. The first Black woman.
That's a big deal. The fact that they didn't cover it, they're just like, whatever.
Yeah. Nixon won the U.S. presidency and that's all people could talk about. And so when I was thinking about it, I was like, okay, well, I don't know who was elected the 12th district of New York into the House of Representatives. So that I could kind of see why it's a local, so it's not a big deal. And they didn't have the news like we do now. And I feel like if that would have been in a time of social media, it would have gotten a lot of coverage, but she was super bummed that she didn't get more coverage. But whatever, she's like, that's fine. I'm going to go and rock it. Don't feel bad for Farmer. He was actually appointed by Nixon to the secretary. He was the assistant secretary of education. So he was doing just fine. Though he didn't like the way Nixon was doing shit. So he dropped out before Nixon's scandal. So in the grand scheme of things, dropping out of the Nixon administration because you didn't like how things were run is
a good idea.
Good idea. Thumbs up.
Butter.
Thumbs up to that guy. Anyway, back to Shirley. So if you think getting elected to Congress was the battle, no. It was just the beginning. Later in 2003, in an interview that we can link to in the show notes, she talked about the struggles, and they weren't from being Black. There were starting to be a lot of Black representatives. She says, I met far more discrimination being a woman than being Black when I moved into the political arena.
Wow, that's a big statement.
Yeah. So I watched this video where she talks about her first few months were just fucking miserable.
Oh, I bet so. It was probably me in that leadership conference with all the fucking bros. And it's just like, hey, bro. And you're like, shut up.
Yeah. She literally talks about a story in this video of a can't sit here, seats taken. She couldn't find anywhere to sit at lunch.
Oh my God. How fucking petty.
Because she was a woman. So then she goes on to tell this one story of this congressman who was a real dick to her. And she didn't name the congressman. And I didn't have enough energy. I bet if I did some internet sleuthing, I could figure it out. So internet sleuths, let us know if you know who it is. But she never says who this guy was because she's a class act. But so this guy, this one congressman, every time she would enter the floor of the Senate, the way that she would come in from her office, she had to completely walk across the stage. And he would cough, not just clear in his throat, cough every time she would enter the room until she sat down.
Oh, and so what the fuck is, okay, wait, what?
That's not even a joke. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not funny.
I don't. Let me get, listen. So one day she says she turned to this dude that I guess was chill with her named Brock Adams and was like, does this guy have TB? What should he be coming to work if he's that sick? And he's like, no, you haven't noticed. Like, he coughs and coughs and coughs. And as soon as you sit down, he takes out his handkerchief and spits in it. So it's like his way of like showing everybody that he's spitting in your face.
Oh, what a prick.
So she goes to, I don't know, JCPenney or some shit, and buys a man's handkerchief. And so the next day she's like entering the Senate floor. And of course he starts coughing and coughing and coughing. And so she starts like power walking up to him. And then when he goes to take out his handkerchief, she like takes hers out and puts it in his face and goes, beat you to it today.
Ooh, I love her sassafras.
Mm. Everybody, like the whole floor starts dying laughing and his face just turns like beet red. He's just like,
good. Misogyny, yeah. Burn in hell.
Yeah. So he never did that again. And I just loved that story of, again, it shows she's not, some people would have been like, I am a junior senator. I need to make friends with these people. I need to pretend like I don't notice it. They go low, I go high. She was like,
she's
no.
Unbossed, bitch. She is unbossed. She
is unbossed. So the frustrations didn't start there. She felt like nobody was taking her seriously. And the first committee that she was put on was the Agricultural Committee. And she was like, I live in Brooklyn. We don't have
There's no agriculture. Yeah.
And she goes, maybe they read the book, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
And they're like, well, there's a bunch of stuff.
There's a bunch of trees. And she was like, no.
There's absolutely nothing.
And she complained. And they were basically like, you shouldn't even be here. So how about you just do your work and not complain? And she was like, okay. So she's like, agriculture, what can I do there that's gonna work for my district? Okay, agriculture is food. There are a lot of poor single mothers in my district that can't buy food. So she reaches across the aisle and works with a Republican named Bob Dole. And they start working together and they develop this program that we now know as WIC. Which is women, infant, and children. It's like a part of the food stamps.
Yeah,
program.
Like whenever you go into a grocery store, certain items are labeled WIC items, mm-hmm. and those items are free to women who have children. That's so cool. I didn't know she started that.
I mean, she wasn't like the founding member, but she was one of the like five. Her and Bob Dole are like the big ones. And so, yeah. So she took a crappy assignment and made something good out of it. But she was still like, hello, I have a master's in education. Why am I not on one of these educational committees? Like,
yeah.
And they were like, because we do real work with that. Sit back down, lady. And she was just like,
God, I could not. I would not be able to stomach all that misogyny.
I know. It was just like they kept putting her in these committees that they felt like she wasn't going to be able to do anything in so that she would prove herself to be ineffectual. Do you know what I mean?
To make her look bad for her district because all these items that she's assigned to have nothing to do with her district.
Right? But she made it work for her. It's awesome. So during her tenure, she got labeled Fighting Shirley.
Yes, I love it.
I'm just imagining her like Muhammad Ali, you know, like float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. I'm Shirley.
I'm hearing the Rocky theme song.
Yes. But she got a lot of shit done in her time in the House of Representatives. On top of the food stamps program, she also championed equal rights, equal pay for women, childcare program. She voted on measures to end the Vietnam War. She did eventually end up on the educational committee. So
that should have been from the beginning.
From the beginning. She has a master's, but okay. In 1971, she was the founding member of two committees, the Black Caucus Committee.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And the National Women's Political Committee.
Another huge one.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can thank Shirley for that. So she was in the House of Representatives from 1968 to 1983. Listing all of her accomplishments, it would just be, we'd be here forever. So let's fast forward to 1972. Nixon is running for re-election. And in early 1972, Shirley decides they need someone who's not afraid to shake things up to beat this guy. I'm going to throw my hat in for the nomination for the Democratic Party. And she announces her candidacy as the first woman and the first Black person to run for president of the Democratic Party.
Wow.
It makes her the first Black person to run for a major party, but not the first woman. In 1964, a woman had run on the Republican ticket.
Okay.
Yeah. She didn't get the candidacy either, but yeah. So Shirley, like, she made her announcement at a Black Baptist church, so that it got a huge reaction. And she says, "I'm not the candidate of Black America, though I'm Black and proud. I'm not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman and equally proud of that. I am the candidate of the people, and my presence before you symbolizes a new era." I love that.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Like, she literally trailblazer motherfucker.
I know. Sadly, her campaign wasn't taken very seriously, which if you've been paying attention to any of the story, it probably shouldn't be surprising.
Yeah.
But she did get a lot of media attention. So, and she did have a lot of people that were like fiercely into her. Like, it kind of makes me think of like his was taken a little bit more seriously, but how many people were really into Bernie.
Yeah, you had diehard supporters.
Right. She did have some diehard supporters. So at least she's getting media coverage this time. There was this one, well, she got lots of death threats, which really don't surprise me.
I like, that's one thing that I just never will understand. Like, you can disagree with somebody and not wish them dead.
Yeah. because some people are mentally unstable, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Hello, everyone. It's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Her husband got assigned to like the head of her security intel, so they got to spend more time together.
That's one way to do it.
She made big waves, and I don't understand why this was a story, but it was a big fucking story, so I included it. This guy named George Wallace, who is also running for the Democrat nomination, got shot by some political nut. He was in the hospital. Back in the day, George Wallace had been super against integration. Like, he really liked segregation. I didn't get a chance to go down the George Wallace rabbit hole. I don't think I'm
probably
much.
The best that you didn't.
Yeah. But he had said some really shitty shit about Shirley. But then when he got shot, Shirley came and visited him in the hospital the moment he could have visitors. Everybody was like, "Why are you here seeing your rival that said shit about you?" And she was like, "You guys aren't listening. I'm not here just to be president for people that like me. I'm here to be president for everybody. So, of course, I want him to get better soon. I want him to know I'm thinking about him." And
it's called humility. It's called being a human being. It's called being friendly.
Right?
Integrity.
So ultimately, she didn't get the nomination, but it was just, it set a precedent. It gave Black girls, Black people, like, "Oh, look, someone else has tried. I can try." You know what I mean?
That's a huge deal. I mean, just seeing
representation,
the number,
like, we go on.
It's so important.
Have you seen the TV show Mrs. America?
I have not.
I think I've told you about it before. I think when I was watching it one night, I had too many glasses of wine and I called you and I was like, "Nathan, this is America." The main characters in it are Phyllis Schlafly, who was that lady who was against the Equal Rights Amendment that got hit in the face with a pie, and Gloria Steinem. So those are the two main characters of the show. What's her name? Cate Blanchett plays Phyllis Schlafly.
I just like seeing the pie get shut
Yeah, yeah. It is such a well-done show. It's a mini series. I think there's only like 10 episodes. Also, what's her name? Paulson. Is it Sarah Paulson?
Sarah Paulson.
She's in it too. There's a lot of great people in it. So you should definitely watch it. Shirley is not one of the main characters. She's in almost every episode, but she's, you know, not one of the main characters. Mm-hmm. Played by Uzo Abuda.
Aduba. Yeah. She
plays. My dyslexia doesn't like when there are lowercase D's and B's in the same name.
Yeah. Uzo Aduba or something like that. She played Crazy Eyes.
Okay. Well, I didn't watch Orange is the New Black, so I wasn't familiar with her, but I can say that she was a very compelling character in this show.
Oh, she's a great actress.
I think the show takes some liberties, but it depicts, again, these groups fighting for the Equal Rights for Women Act, but then it becomes inner fighting because the feminist group decides that Shirley's not electable. So she's already had the black interest groups before telling her she wasn't.
Because like she's a woman.
And now she has the female groups telling her she's not electable.
Because she's black.
Yeah. IRL, in real life, Gloria Steinem has said that that's not how things went down. I don't know. I don't know. But still, it's what a punch in the gut, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to that double handicap that she kept saying that she had, and it's so true. Like,
yeah,
two women, like, if you're a black woman, you have two strikes against you.
Yeah.
Like, and that's horrible.
Yeah. In the show, she was, like, absolutely floored when Gloria Steinem didn't back her and then backed the guy that then went on to get the nomination and lost against Nixon for his second term. But, yeah, do go watch the show. It's really good. So she didn't get the nomination. So she returns to Congress and she goes on to be fighting Shirley for another 10 years. So she didn't let it take the wind out of her. Which
yeah, she kept pushing. She kept going.
She may not have won the candidacy, but she got a lot of media attention. We can't say because she didn't win the candidacy, she's not a political success. She had a very successful career for a black woman at the time, but for any congressperson.
Yeah, she served, well, from the last time that we saw, she was serving like 15 years. Like, she's going on like 20. Like, she served a long ass time.
She was a champion of political refugees. She wanted better pay for domestic workers. She fought for like a livable minimum wage, which is like something people are still fighting for. Mm-hmm. And as always, she was very involved in education reform. She and Conrad did divorce in 1977.
Will we see this divorce on our friend show, Trashy Divorces?
No. It seems like this was like the friendliest divorce.
Okay, so there's not a podcast called Friendly Divorces.
There's not a That would be such a boring podcast.
Yeah, I don't like you anymore. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.
Sorry.
there doesn't seem to have been any kind of scandal. And Conrad, you know, for the rest of his life, people were like, oh, you were married to Shirley Chisholm. Like, what's she like? And he was just
What's the tea?
And he was just always like, Shirley is a wonderful person. And that's like all he was like, she is so smart and so strong.
So it seems like it ended on good terms. Yeah. There was no bad blood.
Yeah, it just didn't work out. And she wasn't lonely long. She remarried that same year. A man named Arthur Hardwick, who he had also served on the New York Assembly at the same time as her.
Oh, so that's probably how they met.
So it's like a reconnect. They reconnected after her divorce. Let's hope there wasn't any overlap. If there was, it's not mentioned. But she retired during the Reagan administration because she fucking hated that guy. She never straight came out and said, I fucking hate that guy. But she fucking hated that guy. Well, I mean, if she was for, like, Reagan was about trickle-down economics, like cut the taxes for the rich people and make the rich richer and we'll all get richer. It's like, no, they just are greedy.
He was also at that point demonizing the welfare queen or the
ones
who lived in poverty, and those were her constituents.
Yes. And so that is when she was like, all right, I'm tired. I've done all I can do. I've set y'all up for success, but I don't want to work with this guy. So she retired from Congress, but she didn't retire altogether. She joined the board of an all-women's college, and she started teaching classes and doing lecture tours. She would speak about the, you know, women's rights, her struggles as a black woman, and she would go on to endorse candidates and bills for the rest of her life.
So she's basically like the Rolling Stones, except going on tour because she's awesome and
blank. Yes. Alone. Yes.
Yeah. That was a stretch, Nathan.
So Shirley died at age 80 in 2005. The engraving on her vault that she's laid to rest in says, any guesses?
Unbossed and unbought.
Yep.
Bitch. And Daenerys Targaryen of politics.
Yes. In 2015, she was posthumously. I said it right. Okay. In 2015, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Honor by Barack Obama.
Makes sense.
And that is Shirley Chisholm, the first Black woman to run for president.
Wow, that's super interesting. Like, I had no idea her life had that many, like...
Yeah.
That was so cool.
Because she had so many things that she could have just been like, oh, well, I'm never going to get anything done because of my double handicap. But she was like, fuck that.
And I think whenever I was watching, you know, coverage of before Biden's acceptance speech last night, I think I saw like on NPR or something, they made references to Shirley Chisholm and they were like, you know, expecting this speech for her to make references to those Black heroes like John Lewis and Shirley Chisholm. And I was like, that's who Katie's researching. #relevant.
They're both the children of double immigrants. They're both, you know, first. Super I hope you guys. Cool. I hope this inspired you that don't let the bastards get you down.
Yes, amen. Preach. Hands up.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys.
Love you, bunch.
Bye, bitches.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry. Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire. Huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.